addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green for getting us to Friday. It is July 9th and this is Game On. Coming up, there's only one show in town, the European Championships final.
And off goes the Napoli star again. Jinks inside and away from Tielemans. Insigne! World class Lorenzo Insigne! A spellbinding strike!
We'll talk Gaelic football with Paul Kerrigan and hurling with Shane McGrath. Plus, we'll get reaction to Bernard O'Byrne's social media post from Aina basketball player Hilary Nets.
Game on 2FM.
Now, if you want to get in touch, please do so. Text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Now, I'm delighted to say that I am joined in studio by Alan Cawley. Alan, a massive weekend of football. We've been building and building and building towards this final, and we now know that it's going to be Italy and England on Sunday at Wembley. And I predict it is going to be beautiful.
It's absolutely going to be beautiful, Maria. I can't wait for it. We've had an unbelievable tournament. It's probably exceeded expectations. Had we known maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago, if we were asked the question, would the tournament be as good as what it was? We would have been hoping it would have been, but I don't think anyone would have predicted just how good it's been. It's been absolutely brilliant. And all the different plots and the different storylines, and the fact that Italy were probably the most impressive team since the opening night and have carried themselves all the way through, obviously, to the final. And then England, on the other hand, the story that's behind that as well. I think it's set up for an absolutely brilliant final, Marie, and one that I wish it was on right now, and I can't wait for it.
Yeah, and look, a lot of the build-up has been focused on Ireland relationship with England, because quite a few people have decided that they want to support them in this final. Fergal Brennan, journalist in England, but a lot of Irish connections, joins us on the line. Fergal, I think we are warming to England here. What about the diaspora in the UK?
I'd say it's a fair split, really, down the middle. Most people that I've spoken to will be on the side of backing the Italian team, painting the orange on the tricolour to red to back up the Italians. But I'd say from wider conversations that I've had, things that I've read online, connections to other friends and that kind of thing, there seems to be, yeah, a bit more of a warming towards them. And I think a big reason for that is Southgate and the players. I think previous England teams have been quite difficult to get behind, or at least kind of begrudgingly give a bit of support to. That's not really the case this time round. Southgate is quite a likeable person. He's quite focused, and the team themselves have won a lot of people over, because I think they've kind of undone a lot of the negativity that surrounded previous England teams, and that, along with a number of other factors, is probably what's powered them onto the final.
Yeah, and I think one of those factors as well is just that the football they're playing and the squad that they are, they're young, they're exciting, they're bursting with talent, they have loads of depth, and they're free of kind of burdens and expectations of the past, and that's coming out.
Yeah, and that's what he's created, Marie, to be fair to him. He's taken all the flack, all the pressure off them, wanted to focus it on that, and he's almost created like a club-like mentality with the players. You look out together and unified they are. And to be fair, I felt right at the start, I'm saying it here the last 4 or 5 weeks, I did feel as though they had an unbelievable chance. And as you say, Marie, with the squad of players that they have, they should be qualified, or they should be getting to the latter stages of competitions now with the squad of players that they have. So this shouldn't come as a real surprise that they're getting into the final. Obviously, they've had a great campaign. They got to the semi-final of the World Cup, the Nations League, they got to the final as well. So they've been building towards this. This is the time now where they'll feel as though this is it, this is our time, this is what we've worked so hard for, all the preparation, all the stuff that's gone on behind the scenes in terms of Southgate as well. And Fergal's right, just how likeable he is. I've always liked Southgate, and all throughout his tenure with, because I mentioned here before as well, the English job is a poison chalice. It can ruin people, it can absolutely destroy people, and it has done in the past. So he was probably under no illusions about that as well when he took over, but he was obviously groomed in the fact that he was with the under-21s and stepped up through that as well. He was a player himself, so he totally understood the culture. So he went about it probably from a different avenue compared to other managers in terms of what he wanted to do, setting out in terms of how he could maybe feel as though he could make it better. Not the football side of things, probably the stuff that you can control outside of the football. The media and how difficult that can be, Marie, and we all know like they can destroy people as well. So I think he's done an absolutely fantastic job. Whether they'll get it done, get the job done on Sunday, that remains to be seen. But I think they've every chance, and I think it's probably the best chance that they'll ever have to win a major tournament now. And for people who say, oh, well, they've come through the easy way and they haven't played anyone of any significant note as well, that's nonsense. They've come through the tournament, they've only conceded one goal, they've been absolutely brilliant, and they deserve where they are at the moment. And if they go on to win it, good luck to them, Marie.
Well, Italy are quite a likeable team as well, Fergal. They're so stylish on and off the field. Yeah. But I think that they're a team as well that people have fallen in love with throughout this tournament, because I'm not sure how much expectation there was on them from the start. But the minute the tournament started, I think people started to realise that they offer something very, very special. And they'll be a team that we'll remember, I think, for a long time from this tournament, given such great entertainment. But I really like the dark arts as well that we see with them, and the fact that they are so well able to get fouls when they really, or to get frees when they really need them, and just to bring something really different.
Yeah, I think ironically they're actually in a similar position to England, whereby so much of the focus of what they've done so far at the tournament and the build-up to the tournament is about the manager. And Mancini, much like Southgate, has worked really hard to make that the case, deflect pressure away from the players, deflect the tension away from the players, because he also wants them to be free to go out and perform, but also he knows just how toxic it can be surrounding a tournament. Alan touched on it there, but it is even more so the case with the England national team. If this current England team was existing within the kind of toxic climate that previous England teams have been in, and they reached the semi-final, it'd be absolute lunacy compared to what it is now, which is obviously hyped up, but he's still very measured, because Southgate is keeping a handle on that. And in terms of Italy, again, similarly to England, a very good team, a very good unit. They don't have the star names that, when you think back to maybe the late 90s or early noughties, Baggio, Maldini, Inzaghi. But they've got players who are playing in the best leagues in Europe, players who've won major trophies in the last season or two. And that's what he plays on. And, you know, you touched as well on the dark arts and that bit of experience. We saw Chiellini giving Jordi Alba a big hug before the penalties against Spain. those types of little things win these games. They do, but it was brilliant. I mean, I kind of said he looked like an uncle at a wedding, just grabbing him and giving him a big hug. But they do. Those little battles, those little thin margins tend to be what wins big games. And that's something that England don't necessarily have. Not that they don't have the ability to you know, get involved in the dark arts. They don't have the experience of Chiellini, Bonucci, Jorginho, Verratti, to just kind of, when there's a really pressurised situation, or you need to slow the game down, or you need to tactically win a few fouls or win a few mental battles with the person that you're marking, they either don't have that, or they've never been in a position in their career so far to show that, short of a couple of examples, the likes of Jordan Henderson and the Man City players. So for me, I think that will be the defining thing in the final. Italy do have that experience and that ability to do it. England, as positive as they have been in the run to the final, as Alan said, they fully deserve to be there. That's still a big question mark that's hanging over them ahead of Sunday night.
Alan, they have an ability as well to score goals, and it's quite interesting because, as Fergal mentioned there, they haven't really got, you know, a key standout player, but they've still scored 12 goals, only behind Spain, who've scored 13. And from Gareth Southgate's point of view, that's almost trickier, because he doesn't know who to close out. Like, he doesn't have one danger area that he needs to focus on. He has a lot of players there that have an ability to find the net.
Yeah, because that's the thing, as you say, Marie, they've all chipped in with goals. There's not like one star centre forward that scored four or five. Immobile has been probably disappointing after he did score on the first night, but you look at it, and I think Southgate will be fully aware of the threats that they pose, Marie. I think the big area where it's going to come down to, for me, is probably the midfield area. And I think that's, for all the plaudits that Bonucci and Chiellini have got, I think their midfield is the strongest in the competition. Bar probably Spain, with Busquets. Spain were brilliant the other night as well. But you look at Jorginho, Verratti and Barella. And Barella's been a revelation with Inter Milan as well. And he's obviously carried the form into the national team as well. But just their ability to hold on to the ball and the possession that they will obviously look to have in the final, I think that's probably the key area. I mentioned here the other night as well, and I think this gives huge hope to England if they were looking at the semi-final, the amount of chances that Spain created. Because, as I say, for all the plaudits Bonucci and Chiellini have got, you can get at this Italian team. You really can. They're not as watertight as people think. And I know, obviously, they're based on that and they love the defending side of things.
And they haven't beaten in 33 games.
Yeah, and they have the stats to back it up. But I think if you look at the likes of Kane, Sterling, and it's particularly Sterling and the form that he's in at the moment, and the speed and the pace and that he's playing with, he's electric at the moment, Sterling. So if I was Chiellini and Benucci, I wouldn't want to be faced up with the likes of him. So there's different parts of the pitch where obviously the game is going to be won and lost, but I definitely think that area, which means Rice and Phillips will have a huge job on their hand, and obviously Mason Mount to drop back in and help them as well. They've been brilliant as well, considering they're so young. I think Rice and Phillips have been brilliant in the competition, but I think that's the area where the game will be won and lost in terms of that midfield area, Marie, and it'll be key. It's like every match at the moment, there's so much detail goes into it. There's fascinating tactical battles all over the pitch. You can bring it down to, as Fergal said, experience, and the experience that those Italian fellas have, particularly at the back. But I just think it's England's time, it's England's moment. You look at the momentum they've built up in the tournament all along. It pains me to say that, Marie, but I just think that it is their time and their moment. And you look at Harry Kane as well, he's been absolutely brilliant since I couldn't believe people were writing him off after two games. Like, it's a crazy world when you think they were doing that, but he's been brilliant in the last few games as well. So it's set up to be so good, Marie, and I'm really looking forward to it.
And Fergal, when you think as well about Italy, and there were so many questions about how they're going to cope without Spinazzola, and they seem to have been fine with Emerson.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a possible weak point that England could look to exploit with Sterling and probably Bukayo Saka, who's going to play on the other side. He's not played a massive amount of football with Chelsea this season. His best stuff is going forward. Defensively, there is a bit of a concern over him, but I also think that's packaged in a way it is, because Spinazzola has been so good. He's arguably been the fullback of the tournament, and that injury that he got in the quarterfinal that's ended his competition is obviously massively disappointing. Emerson, yeah, in terms of, he does have a bit of experience, and he tactically he's quite aware, but I think the key will be the lads alongside him, Chiellini, Bonucci. They'll be telling him for 120 minutes, don't go over the halfway line, don't get pushed too far up the pitch, don't get dragged away from us. And if he, you know, if he sticks by them and he listens to what he's told and he sticks to his task, that's a door, that's a potential door that was open for England that could be slammed shut, because you look through the rest of the Italy team, you can't really see them giving up too much in any area of the pitch. England need to exploit and make use of what they can. If that's a weak point, they can exploit it. But if he can stay on his game and you know, be communicated, talk through the game by the lads alongside him, that'll make it a bit more difficult for England.
Alan, now that I think it's widely accepted that Gareth Southgate does indeed know what he's doing and he does know his best starting 11, if you look at his defence format, so against the Danes he had the four-man defence, while before he had he switched to three to counter the impacts of the German wing-backs. What do you think he's going to do now on Sunday?
I think he'll stick with the back four of what we saw against Denmark. I felt Kyle Walker was absolutely brilliant as well. And there's players that are probably not being mentioned in the same light as the likes of Sterling and Kane. I thought Luke Shaw was outstanding as well against Denmark. So I think he'll go with the flat back four. Maguire, who there was a lot of uncertainty about coming into the competition as well. And I've given him a fair bit of criticism during his the season with Man United, but he's been brilliant, to be fair to him, Harry Maguire. And I think Stones as well. A lot of people come up with, oh, well, Stones is only good if he has a good partner beside him. Hence, when he had Diaz and people saying that's why he's playing so well at Man City, and now with England as well saying, oh, he has Maguire beside him. But I think Stone is a fantastic player. I know there's the odd clanger in him, but I think he's been very good this year with Man City, and he's eradicated that from his game, and we see that with England as well. They've been brilliant. So defensively they've been sound. I still think he'll go with that back four, Marie. I think he'll go with the three that we saw again the other night. I don't think Jordan Henderson will start. Rice and Phillips have been very good, and I think that's the key thing for him, and I think that's going to give them the edge over Italy as well. You look at the difference the substitutes made coming on the other night. So far, Southgate has got it spot on with his team selection in every game. Marie, he's obviously chopped and changed the odd game here and there. Trippier coming in, and then obviously he left him out in another game. But I think if you look at the impact that the likes of a Grealish, Foden, even Henderson coming on, I think that has the edge over Italy. I don't think Italy have that depth to bring on in terms of the squad that they have. So I think that's, as you get into the latter stages, you think of, if it's been a long few weeks in terms of tournament football, not just physically, mentally as well, you think of what the semi-final may have taken out of them. Italy had a really tough game against Spain where they were under the cosh and under pressure for the majority of the match, really. Now they'll be ready to go in terms of when it's kickoff time, but you could imagine 65, 70 minutes into the game, and you could imagine a Foden coming on or a Grealish running at you. So I think that's where England may have the edge as well, with the quality they have coming off the bench.
Yeah, and what about Italy's depth? Because we haven't heard as much about them and their team selections and maybe as many arguments about it that, as we had against England, Fergal.
Yeah, I think Alan is right. England's trump card in that sense is the players that they can bring off the bench. Italy are strong, I would say 1 to 15, the first two or three players they can bring off the bench would be a match for England. But now, obviously, with the substitutions rule being changed, the fact that you can bring on five players, I don't, particularly in an attacking sense, I don't think Italy have got five as good as England that they can bring on if they're chasing the game or if they need a goal or something in that situation. England, obviously, defensively probably don't have as much cover if they get an injury in the final. But that is an edge that England do have. Alan is right on that. But there's players that probably won't start for Italy tomorrow night. I think they'll go with the same team from the semis. They've kept the same team from the quarters and the semis, which will be Insigne and Federico Chiesa either side of Immobile. You've still got Berardi, who scored some really important goals so far this tournament, and Belotti, who's a very interesting one. He hasn't really been a goal-scoring threat, but Mancini's not been frightened to throw him on, use him as a bit of a battering ram to make some space and let some of the other lads come into play in behind him. So if we're in a situation where after two or three subs it's still a game of chess and there's nothing to pick, then I think England will have a bit of an edge. But Southgate, again, has got to get those calls right. He's got to bring on the players at the right time. He can't show his hand too early, and he can't freeze, particularly if England are losing. He can't leave it until the last 10 or 5 minutes to try and make a change. He has to make that judgment, particularly if England are losing or if Italy are in the ascendancy.
Alan, the Italian press are suggesting that Immobile isn't going to start. He hasn't been maybe as good as people expected, but he's had some impressive moments.
I'd start him because I'd agree with Fergal. Belotti, his replacement, is just a battering ram. He doesn't offer as much, even though Immobile hasn't been as good in the last couple of games. I don't think they've too many other options bar Belotti, and he's average enough, to be honest with you, Marie. So I would start him. Maybe the Italian press know a bit more than us and what's going on maybe in the camp or behind the scenes, but I certainly would start him. But I think that's what Italy are built on, is the unity and the spirit, and obviously tactically Mancini's very good. They do have serious quality in that midfield area, but they've no superstar quality up front. Whereas England have, I think, with Kane and Sterling, and you look at the difference in what they've been so far in the tournament as well, particularly Sterling. Like, it's hard to believe, and I think that goes back to, again, what we said about Southgate. Sterling wasn't getting his game with Man City for the last maybe 8 or 9 weeks of the season, and people were suggesting he might not play for England. And maybe another manager wouldn't have picked him, but obviously the relationship that Southgate has built over a period of time with the likes of Sterling, a Pickford, these lads who maybe come in for a bit of criticism prior to the tournament, I think that's where he's got it spot on as well. So I think when it comes down to it, you have almost the unity and spirit of a team. Obviously England have that as well, but Italy seem to have more so. But I think England have the more star quality than what Italy have. And I said it even the other night in terms of styles make fights with the Spanish, with the way they play against the way the Italian style. I think we might have something similar the weekend as well. It just makes it so interesting, so fascinating. I think, and I know the Denmark story was brilliant and all that went on with Denmark, but this is the final we all wanted, Italy and England, and I think it's going to finish off the tournament exactly how we wanted to finish off, because the tournament itself has been absolutely brilliant, Marie.
Okay, so how's it going to finish off, Alan?
Well, I've said England all along, I'm not changing now.
Score prediction?
I think they'll win well. I think it'll be tight for a period of time, but it wouldn't surprise me if they win by a couple of goals.
Fergal?
I think Alan's been a bit swept up too much in it. I'm going for Italy. Yeah. I'd say it'll go the distance. I can fully see it go to extra time, and I'd say Italy 1-0.
Okay. We'll see.
Yeah, we will see. And just very quickly as well, there's another big game at the weekend. I don't know if you've been following it, but I'm going to throw it at you, Fergal. Argentina, Brazil.
Yeah, this is going to be a huge game, kind of to get you started if you're willing to stay up late on Saturday night going into Sunday morning. It's been billed as Neymar up against Messi, but really for me, and I think for most football fans, it's all about Messi. Famously, hasn't won a major international title with Argentina. It's been kind of used as a little bit of an asterisk next to his name as such an incredible player. All the signs seem to be pointing towards him. You know, we're looking for a fairy tale in the Euros. This is where the real fairy tale is. And he looks absolutely pumped for it. There was the thing with Yerry Mina in the penalty shootout in the semi-final where he was shouting at him. And he looks absolutely riled up for this. And Brazil have been good, but they've been possibly the least Brazil team for decades. Very organised, very kind of battle-hardened, but with that quality of Neymar and Lucas Paqueta up top. But I think the great and good will be rowing in behind Messi for this one, because he deserves it. He's been such a loyal servant for Argentina over the years, and you kind of feel like he wants this, and he wants to add it to sign off his international career and maybe his professional career in the next couple of seasons, because he has been absolutely incredible for them. But he's just had so many instances of heartbreak at either the World Cup or the Copa America. It just seems to be pushing in his direction, and I'd absolutely love to see them do it and him score the winner.
Well, Fergal, it's good to hear that we won't have to go cold turkey on the international football anyway. We can wean ourselves off it. Thank you so much for joining us, and enjoy the game, Alan. I'm going to keep you for a minute because I just want to talk very quickly about the Irish teams in action in Europe last night. So a tough defeat for Sligo Rovers, a good win for Dundalk 4-0 over Newport, and then Bowes and Stirling 1-1 draw. So overall, a bit of a mixed bag for the Irish teams.
Mixed bag, but lots of hope to come from it as well, Marie. I watched the Bohemians-Stirling game, and Bohemians were the better team. They conceded a sloppy enough goal, which Keith Long will be disappointed with it, but overall they were the better team, and it will give them huge hope going into the second leg. Obviously it's India Viva as well, 6,000 supporters sold out, so that's going to be a great occasion for them, and I give them huge hope. I'd be disappointed if they don't get through, Marie. They were the far better team last night, and something similar with Sligo Rovers. I know they went down to a 1-0 defeat, but huge hope to come from that as well, in terms of the opposition that they're playing, FH. And again, I'd be disappointed. I'm going down to the game next Thursday in Sligo. A lot of people looking forward to it, and I hope they'll get through. And as I say, I will be disappointed if the two teams don't come through, because what I watched last night in the games, I think our two teams are far better than what the Icelandic showed up last night. But if you look at then the Dundalk one, that was expected. They should be beating the likes of Newtown. They won handy enough 4-0, but there's huge money on offer for these games, Marie. Like, even beating a team like Newtown, there's 300 grand for that game last night. So huge money for a League of Ireland club. It was a good win for Dundalk, and I was glad to see it, and I fully expect the other two to come through as well.
Okay, and there are a couple of games tonight as well, and I guess the game of the weekend really will be St. Pat's and Derry City.
Yeah, I'm heading over to Richmond, looking forward to it, Marie, as well. Obviously St. Pat's are chasing down Sligo Rovers and Shamrock Rovers. If they win by 3 goals or more tonight, they will go back top, but this will be a tough ask against Derry City. Since Rory Higgins has gone in, they've improved. I think they've only won defeat in the last 8 games, so they have improved. They've done very well under Rory. It'll be a tough game, but I do fancy Pat's, but I'm looking forward to heading over.
Yeah, and there's been a little bit of controversy around Derry City since last night, and they, straight after the game, they announced that they're going to re-sign Patrick McElhinney, and Vinnie Perth after the game then hit out and said that it was disgraceful to be announcing it then.
Yeah, Vinnie wasn't happy last night, Marie. There's no set rule, I suppose, on this in terms of when you announce it. Maybe Vinny feels as though they should have showed a little bit more respect and held on maybe even till today or this morning. But I think it was always on the cards that Patrick was probably going to leave and go back to Derry City. I know they've been chasing him. His contract's up at the end of the season as well. They may even get him in the window. But he is keen to go back. And I know Rory Higgins is trying to get that feel back to the club and bring back some of the top Derry lads and the likes of McElhinney. So it's a brilliant signing for Derry City. I can kind of understand where Vinny is coming from, but he was always going to leave. And this is the problem now. Shields left, McElhinney left, there's talk of Huba maybe as well, so yeah, it's a difficult time for Dundalk, but at least they got through the European game last night.
Exactly. Okay, Alan, we're going to take a very quick break.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm, naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Now, earlier today, Chief Executive of Basketball Ireland, Bernard O'Byrne, issued an apology for a social media comment he made regarding Raheem Sterling. He has since deleted the post. I'm now joined by AINA basketball player Hilary Netz. Hilary, just first of all, what was your reaction to the post by Bernard O'Byrne?
My first reaction to everything that happened, I was kind of trying to make sure that it was a legit post and it wasn't like a hacked account or something like that. Once I had done my investigations and confirmed that it was an actual post, it was mostly anger and disappointment to see, supposedly an advocate for diversity and inclusion putting something up like this on such a huge platform with millions of people viewing it. It was just really disappointing to see and upsetting.
Yeah, and it's really hard to make sense of as well, because Basketball Ireland seems on the surface to pride itself on how good it is on inclusion and diversity. And just when you even look at any of the games or go to any of the clubs, you just see how much diversity and inclusion there is there. And I think that has added to the shock and disappointment.
Yeah. No, I think Basketball Ireland as a whole do a lot for diversity and inclusion. And you know, like, they are supportive in things like that. It was just very upsetting to see that somebody in that position would say something like that and, you know, think that it's okay to put that out in public. It was crazy, really.
It really was. And, like, you were a member of the diversity panel, the Basketball Ireland diversity panel, but you have stepped away from that role. What happened there, Hilary?
Yeah, I decided to step away from the diversity and inclusion committee just because, you know, with the comments that were made on social media yesterday, I didn't feel like I could be part of the same organization. So it was best for me to step away from that. And that's not to take away from the people that are on the committee that do great work, and we've been putting a lot of things forward to be implicated whenever the season starts. So the credit goes to, you know, the Mimi Troyes, the Michael Westbrooks, guys that are really putting in work, and Fu Pepito to get things going.
How damaging do you think this incident, that comment, those actions of the CEO of Basketball Ireland is? How damaging is it to the association?
I think it's going to raise a question to the whole Basketball Ireland as an organisation, to see how they react to a situation like this, how they act, and that's really going to determine how, you know, our diverse community reacts to this, because things have happened like this are examples of how we were shown that we're supported. And if it doesn't, you know, if it doesn't go the right way with this, I feel like it could be potentially very damaging for our community as a whole, not even just the diverse basketball community.
Bernard O'Byrne issued an apology today. Is that apology enough?
I don't think it is. The apology was issued because it was raised. You know, if no one had shown light to what he said, there wouldn't have been an apology. So the apology is only made in reaction to everyone, you know, causing uproar about it.
As it stands, Hilary, he is still the CEO of Basketball Ireland. Is his position tenable, do you think?
I don't want to make any, you know, comments on whether he will still be the president as the CEO after today or after the events that have taken place. But I do think consequences should be in place for such action, and there has to be some accountability.
I regularly go to AINA and see the amount of people playing there, like really strong grassroots right throughout, all the way up through the ages, girls and boys, men and women all involved in the club.
Mm-hmm.
For somebody like you who has made such a great connection with basketball, it's such a big part of your life. Just personally, how do you feel about this?
I'm honestly a bit hurt. You know, I'm not the only person who has, you know, as my life, like my life revolves around basketball, and the other people that have also, you know, moved over to Ireland to play basketball, and then they continue to make a home for themselves here and make a family for themselves. It's just really disappointing and upsetting to have someone who's such a high figure in our organisation saying something like that.
Has there been enough communication or any communication from Basketball Ireland in the wake of this incident?
The only communications I've seen is the statement that they released last night, and there's been a couple of other things in the media, but I haven't, you know, I know that they're meeting and things like that are happening today, but nothing, you know, publicly being put out to say that this is what's happening or this is the next step.
What kind of a reaction would you like from Basketball Ireland?
Honestly, I want some accountability to be shown here, and you know, it can't just be something that blows over. He needs to be held accountable for exactly what he did. I don't know if that means he needs to step away from his position, or you know, he attempts some sort of training or whatever it is, but something does need to happen. Like, action needs to be taken.
Yeah, because I've been in Aina, as I said, and I've been in Aina with you as well, and it does seem like a really nice environment, and you would hope that it extends throughout all the clubs and all the way up through the association.
Yeah, of course. I think, you know, as you say, you've been around Aina, and you can see how the players who join Aina and our imports that do come in find a home. And it's even when you walk into the courts, everyone knows each other. It's a family. There's no, oh, Hillary's a black guy here, or Steph is a Serbian guy. It's just, oh, there's Steph, there's Hillary. You know, it's all just family there.
Yeah, and that's the way that you want it to be. Well, we'll be keeping an eye on what comes out of Basketball Ireland over the next couple of days. But just in terms of the season ahead, Hillary, I know it probably feels like a really extended pre-season because we're still waiting for restrictions to be fully lifted and for full steam ahead for indoor sports.
Yeah, it's been a long, long off-season / pre-season. We're hoping to be back in the court in 3 weeks for our summer league. Like, it's been great seeing the international teams back working and ready to compete for the Euros and stuff like that. But you know, I'm sure it's been a long, long year for some people who haven't touched a basketball or been able to get into facility or even play basketball outdoors, as you know, we do live in Ireland, so weather isn't the most consistent thing. But yeah, we're just hoping that everything comes back in the next few weeks and we can actually get a season going.
Yeah, I think everybody would like that to happen. Hilary Nets, thank you so much for joining me today, and best of luck when that season does get going. Hopefully it will be soon.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a million.
Game on 2FM. Green Farm. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now, it is a quieter than a normal championship weekend, but still plenty to play for as Laois faced Antrim in the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship preliminary qualifiers. Shane McGrath is with me on the line. Shane, there is a big prize on offer for whoever wins this game.
Oh, massive prize, Marie, yeah. And I suppose there isn't a long history of Antrim playing Laois in the championship. I think the first meeting was actually 2005. I think they played 9 times. Antrim won 5, Laois have won 4. And the last time they met, Antrim actually won it in a thriller, 5-17, 3-22, and that was in 2015. So I'm hoping for more of the same, because I'm actually on duty there tomorrow in Parnell Park. So I just feel the prize is massive, Marie. You know, you stay in the Liam McCarthy first and foremost, but you're also going into a kind of a win-win situation in round one of the qualifiers proper, because Antrim or Laois are going to be expected to beat whoever they meet. So it's massive to stay in Liam McCarthy and then to get another top level match, you know, before your year finishes up. And the loser, then you go back down to Joe McDonough, and you know, if that is Laois, it's demoralising for them, because they're already in a league relegation, which they'll probably have to play sometime in August, I suppose. So massive prize. And you know what, Marie, the great thing is it's the first real knockout championship match of the year, so we're definitely going to see an extra bit of bite, extra bit of passion from the other games, where teams knew if they lost they were still going to be in it. This is knockout, and as I said, the prize is massive. Like,
yeah, for sure. And they played each other only just a little while ago in early June, with Antrim coming out on top 223, Laois scoring 122. Big scores by both teams. Can we read much into that, though?
I personally wouldn't, because at that stage Antrim were actually safe in the league. And, you know, Antrim finish up the league with 5 points. They actually finish up with a point ahead of Dublin, and we see how Dublin have done. But For me, I don't think that was Antrim's maybe best team, or maybe they weren't going for it. Like, you know, like they really, really could, because they knew they were safe and they knew they didn't have to win the match. And I suppose Leash knew going up, regardless if they won or lost as well, they weren't going to get out of their relegation spot. So I wouldn't read anything in it. What I would read into the league was I felt that Antrim had a better league. Obviously, you know, a massive result against Clare the first day, and, you know, a massive result against Wexford as well. So if we're going on confidence and we're going on league form, and we can't read too much into Lee, because, you know, we've seen the way Dublin have been an absolutely different animal in the way they were against Antrim, and obviously Galway the last day. But I do feel Antrim are coming in a better vein of form, because, you know, while they lost 3-31 to 22 points against Dublin, in the first half they actually had a goal chance there around 16, 17 minutes, which maybe could have brought them into the game. Now, Dublin were far superior second half, but Leash never looked like they were going to beat Wexford at all, and conceded 5-31. So, you know, Leash conceded 9 goals and 126 points in the league. Like, that's averaging over 30 points a game. So I just feel like, you know, on the basis of the league and taking out of account the last day against Dublin and Wexford, just feel Antrim are coming into it in a better place. And I would, the last time I tipped Antrim to win, now they actually lost the match by 18 points. So hopefully that won't happen for them this time.
Wouldn't be likely to be wrong now, Shane, you know.
You know, the clock is right twice a day, isn't it?
But when you look at Leash, look, it has been quite a difficult season for them. Even before it started, Cheddar Plunkett kind of rose a few questions about their fitness and how much they needed to work on before they even kind of got working on everything else. But they have been struggling, and there's quite a few positions that they seem to have not filled properly yet.
Like, even, Marie, if you take, like, this time 2 years ago, that Leash would have been playing in a preliminary quarter final against Dublin in Port Leash, and I happened to be there that day. Like, ever since then, of their starting 15, they're probably missing 7 or 8 of those guys. Like, you know, between 1 team and 13, lads stepping away, lads going travelling, you know, life goes on, I suppose, for everyone, and you can't keep committing to it. So, and they were on a crest of a wave then as well. Like, so, you know, it's been a hard job for Cheddar, and anyone that knows Cheddar knows he's absolutely hurling to the core. He's one of the best hurling men in the country. His knowledge of the game and everything, and his passion for the game, and, you know, the way the Leash hurlers speak about him, what they do for them, for he does for them personally as well as hurlers. So it just doesn't seem to be happening. As I said, they've shipped a lot of heavy scores, shipping 5-31 the last day against Wexford, playing, I think, you know, more or less 2 extra defenders back, so they had 13-14 lads behind the ball. So look, it's as I said, it's not about hurling. I presume that we're going to see a different Leash, and that they are really going to have to attack this game, because if they don't and they go defensive, you know, they're going to be out of the Liam McCarthy, and they're going to be facing Joe McDonagh again next year. So, you know, it should be making of a great game above in Parnell tomorrow, Marie.
And we have to chat a bit about Kildare, because they really are starting to see the fruits of their labour, and labour that apparently has been going on for quite a few years. But over the last few days, they've beaten Wexford in the 20s and Leash in the minors. Where has all this recent success come from, Shane?
Yeah, for me, Marie, like, there'd be a few Tipperary heads up in Kildare. And, you know, you'd be keeping in touch with them. And I suppose there's a kind of a tie maybe there in that. A lot of the Tip lads, maybe especially the 0-1 All-Ireland winning team, like the Dave Kennedy, Paddy O'Brien, Johnny Enright and Turles, they all would actually hurl with Kildare as well. And we would have seen a lot of transfers, you know, when Kildare were maybe down the division playing Christy Ring and stuff. But, like, this has been no surprise to anyone in Kildare. I suppose it's probably been a surprise to all of us maybe outside. But for people that know what's going on, there's been massive work going on there for the last 10 years. Clubs like May, Selbridge, Maynooth, Leixlip, you know, where I suppose the population is higher and the numbers are bigger, but the drive in the clubs there for hurling has been absolutely massive. A guy called Paul Dively, he's been coming in and he's done massive work with the teams and their physical conditioning and everything, and he's basically doing what Brian Cullen does, you know, for the Dublin teams, and that's definitely paid off. But I suppose what people have realised as well, that, like, Kildare bet Wexford the other night under 20, that's the Wexford team that won the minor 2 years ago. You know what I mean? It wasn't any slouch of a team by any stretch of the imagination. Like, their senior team is making great progress, you know, playing Division 2B hurling. They're making great progress under David Herty. As you said, their minor team bet Leash recently as well. And, you know, like, Dave, what the great thing about up there is, I suppose, that the county board, you know, they're very good. They make allowances for the hurlers to try and go and play with, they want to play with the hurlers, you know, because you know, football is number one in Kildare in a lot of places, but for a lot of those clubs, I mean, they're mainly hurling clubs, and, you know, they've done massive work, and even their manager at the under-20s, Pat English, he's actually a Carlow man, and for them to be Carlow, but to hear him speaking afterwards to say the belief that's in the group, I mean, that was very evident, Marie. They were down to actually 13 men when they won the game. They go down to 13 men, Wexford scored a penalty, and they still, the belief that's there within the group that they can do it, like, because they've been doing it, you see, underage up along. And for me, one of the biggest telling things was the last 5 or 6 years, you get phone calls, Leash or Kildare lads ringing around looking for challenge matches off the Tipperary, the Corks, the Galway, because they know they have a group good enough. And I think, you know, the time is nearly coming now that actually these teams are actually ringing Kildare to come down and play challenge matches, which I think is a massive, massive sign of the progress that's been made in Kildare hurling in recent years.
Yeah, well, fair play to them all, because it just shows what can be done, and it sounds like there are exciting times ahead for Kildare hurling. Shane McGrath, thank you so much for joining me. I, for one, am mostly looking forward to the qualifier draw on Monday, but I'm sure there'll be some good games over the weekend in both codes. I'll chat to you soon.
Cheers, Marie. Thanks
very much. Bye-bye.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
Now it's time to turn our attention to Gaelic football, and I'm delighted to say that I am joined on the line by former Cork footballer Paul Kerrigan. Paul, hopefully this weekend we'll have some mouth-watering clashes, but I think I'm not so sure about how it's going to play out, because there have been quite a lot of one-sided games, but look, it could go any way. And I think one that could be quite interesting is your own County Cork against Limerick. Limerick have had such a good league. They are really, really united, a good team unit, and Cork have been a little bit inconsistent this year. It does feel like it's almost a free shot for Limerick. The pressure is on Cork.
Yeah, I suppose, look, we're probably waiting for the football championship probably to ignite a bit, you know, and I think maybe we get a couple of tighter games this weekend. Yeah, I suppose Limerick, I suppose we played them in 2019, we beat them by about 20 odd points, but I definitely think it'll be an awful lot closer this weekend, and Cork will get a right good test up in the Gaelic grounds. As I said, when we played them, I think they've been steadily improving since then. Obviously, got promoted to Division 4. Very unlucky not to get promoted to Division 3 this year. Beat Waterford quite well this year, and we're probably very unlucky not to catch Tipperary last year if it wasn't for last minute's sideline from Conor Sweeney. So, look, they seem to be playing. Billy Lee seems to have got first playing from good positive setup. And as you said, Cork, we've been probably conceding an awful lot of scores. Like, our last league game was 25 points against Westmeath, and Limerick play like Westmeath, a hard running game. So look, we have it with Cork's third point of view, like, they haven't struggled for scoring, but it's maybe kind of keeping the score down on the other side. But I still think Cork will get through it, but they'll have a right test, I think, from a Limerick team on the upward curve.
Yeah, I agree with you as well. Billy is getting the best out of all of those players that he has. And Tipperary and Kerry then is the other semi-final. I'm not sure though that Tipperary will put up as tough a test as Limerick will. So they're playing Kerry, and I think we all know that Kerry are absolutely flying it. And if you didn't think that they could get any better, they are getting better. Their forwards in particular, we've seen what the Cliffords can do, and then throw in Moynihan, Ganey and Sean O'Shea. They're very difficult to match up to.
Oh yeah, like I think Tip will have their work cut out really this weekend, you know. I could just see them probably setting up everyone really behind the ball, maybe Quinlivan and Sweeney up top, and look, Kerry will have to mind the two of them, their quality, and probably have a bit of cover in front of themselves as well. But as you said, like, they've been scintillating in attack, like you know, they can run it, play it off the shoulder, or play their traditional kicking game. And I think in the forwards, as you mentioned, like, Sean O'Shea went into the full forward line against Clare, and, you know, I think he had 1-6 or 1-7 on top of Clifford's 1-6 as well. So it'll be interesting to see where they play him. And then you have the likes of Clifford, Paddy Clifford, and Darren Moynihan buzzing around, who'll keep probably that mass defence a bit busy. And I suppose then as well, they have the depth off the bench. Like, you saw the likes of Killian Spillane, Jack Barry, Micheál Burns all came on, got a couple of goals, and had a massive impact. Look, I think the same buzz probably isn't there. Maybe the hunger there, they had a poor league, they were relegated. Colin Reardon's back playing AFL, the couple of injuries, like, so Robbie Kiley, Bill Maher, looked at as their work cut out this weekend.
Yeah, and I think when you're talking about Tipperary, you throw Cavan into the same back bracket as well, just how disappointing their league form has, and I think that loss to Wicklow was one that really stands out. They're coming up against a Tyrone team that I don't think we really know what they're about yet. They're obviously trying to change things around a bit, but it's not working out for them, I think, as they would hoped for. How do you see this one going?
Yeah, I think we'll probably there'll be probably two maybe arm wrestlers maybe in Ulster. As you said, Cavan like Tip were provincial champions, defending provincial champions, and relegated. So like I suppose they'll see that Tyrone didn't exactly set the world alight either during the league. They'll probably maybe try to put pressure on Niall Morgan. Like they probably should have it over him in the middle third of the field if they make him go along with his kicks with like Galligan and Gerard McKiernan. Look, if they just bring the same as last year, that brave kind of ultra competitive catching teams on the break with high numbers, look, they've been with a shout. But as you said, Tyrone, like they would have been the team I would have been really looking forward to seeing in the league. And they had a mixed league really, but like I think they're trying to come out of that blank defence kind of culture, and maybe they need to keep a few more forwards up the field, Donnelly, Canavan, McKenna, whoever it is really. So look, I probably fancy Tyrone just to shade it. They probably have the overall quality throughout their squad compared to Cavan, and I think Kyle McShane is back as well. I heard he played a little bit of a challenge game, so he'll give him a real focal point in attacking and maybe play that direct option if they have to go for it. So hopefully we'll see him play, and hopefully we'll see a good game there.
Yeah, well, he'd be definitely worth tuning in for. Donegal and Derry then, and I suppose when you're talking about key players, it looks like Michael Murphy is still a big doubt.
Yeah, he's everything for Donegal. He remains the WCO with goals. He'll probably be mashed up either against Brendan Rodgers or Christian McCaig, who'll give him plenty of it. This is going to be a really good game. Like, I suppose you have the fact that Rory Gallagher, you know, was so heavily involved in their All-Ireland success and with Donegal and has that inside knowledge. Derry, like, they won Division 3 at a canter. Like, their conditioning, their play was, they looked just kind of seemed to be all on the same page. They've often had trouble maybe with clubs up there, but they all seem to be playing it. Class player throughout their team, like McInnes, Glass and Bradley midfield and McGuigan up front. Like, so look, they're coming up against Donegal, who fancy themselves an All-Ireland contender. I kind of slightly fancy Donegal again, similar to Tyrone over Cavan, maybe have that much quality. Like, even if Mac Rarity is shut down, they still have the likes of Jamie Brennan, Ryan McHugh, Michael Lang and Niall O'Donnell all to chip in with it, and maybe Derry don't have the power if McGuigan is held up a bit. So look, I'm really looking forward. I think it'll be a hard running game, probably plenty of overlaps and running from deep to try to get the scores there. So I think there'll be two tight games in Ulster, and interesting to see, especially Derry and Donegal.
Do you think it'll be straightforward for Mayo against Leitrim? COVID aside, they've had to make a few changes as well. Rory Byrne in, Padraig O'Hara, Stephen Cohn and Brian Walsh.
Yeah, like, I think the COVID issue, I don't think they've named a bench or anything either. Like, I suppose you've the likes of Henley, Keegan and McLaughlin are dropping out, so that's a bit of experience. But look, I think Mayo, like, they cruised through Division 2, beat Sligo Handley, the Division 4 team in the last round, up against Leitrim, a similar kind of quality team again. Aidan O'Shea on record full forward in the place of Killian O'Connor. Look, I suppose the last 18 months they've tried to build a bit of depth in their squad as well. And look, the changes this weekend, I think they'll only benefit from kind of building that depth further. Look, they go to 100 miles an hour, and that's how they play. They could blow a team away in the first quarter, and look, that could easily happen. I can't see anything else other than a Mayo convincing victory there.
Okay, Paul Kerrigan, thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy the weekend.
Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back, Alan. There is one game underway at the moment. Finn Harps and Waterford, with Waterford 1-0 ahead.
Yeah, they're winning 1-0, Marie, at half-time, as you say, a penalty with their new signing, Junior Quaterno. And Waterford have improved of late. You look at the stats in the last five games, Marie, 2 wins, 1 draw, 2 defeats, 7 points out of 15. When you think the previous 14 games before that, they'd only won 2 and lost 12, 6 points out of 42. So they have improved. They're breathing down the neck of Finn Harps. It's a huge second half up there because the wheels have come off of Finn Harps, but Waterford are going well, and ever since Mark Bertram come in, they have improved.
Okay, well, now to racing. Jane Mangan joins us on the line. Jane, there are 4 domestic meetings across the country this weekend, but Irish eyes will be drawn further afield.
They absolutely will. We've got a good representative in the Darley July Cup tomorrow. Miss Amulet for Ken Condon and Billy Lee, the sole representative from Ireland in the champion sprint race. It's one of the strongest renewals I've seen in this race for a very long time. She's going to be big odds, but don't be surprised if she outruns those odds. Then, of course, across the channel, across the Atlantic, Aidan O'Brien is a pair of representatives at Belmont in New York. He's got Bolshoi Ballet in the Belmont Derby. Do you remember that horse? The horse that he sent to Epsom and went off favourite. He did disappoint on that occasion, but can he bounce back in the Belmont Derby? And just before that race is the Belmont Oaks. He's sent Santa Barbara, recently runner-up in the Pretty Polly Stakes of the Curra. Can she finally get that elusive Group 1 win to her belt? She could do it in New York. And then on Sunday, we're going back to France, to the other side of Europe. We're going to Deauville, and we have a number of representatives here. Aidan O'Brien has Battleground and Wembley. Colin Keane and Wayne Lorden, respectively, riding those two colts. Ken Condon has Laws of Indices in there. Joseph O'Brien is Thunder Moon. And Irish jockeys Kevin Manning and Oisin Orr also involved in the race for British representatives Memento and Naval Crown. So lots of international intrigue in the world of racing this weekend. It's not just about Wimbledon or the Euros. Don't forget us.
You relax,
never,
you.
Never forget you, Jane. Thanks so much. That is all we have time for. But remember, we've an epic weekend of 2FM celebrating all that's live in music. At 7 p.m, Moke introduces a concert by Denise Chyla, specially recorded for 2FM. And then later tonight, Mo is also playing out one of the big hits of Electric Picnic, The Story of Hip Hop, with Erica Cody, Mango Jafaris and Jess Kavanagh, together with the incredible RTE Concert Orchestra, recorded live at Electric Picnic in 2017. And then that's followed by more great tunes from DJ Wax at 10. So stay tuned after 7. Alan Colley, thank you as always.
Pleasure,
for
Marie.
Coming in. You're going to have an absolutely brilliant weekend. The Euros final and plus all those League of Ireland matches that you will be attending.
In my element.
In your element, exactly. Okay, enjoy all that music coming up next.